Joining us now is Tennessee Senator Frank Nicely. And of course, he's been on the show many times warning people about what is happening with CBDCs, trying to establish a gold depository and some other things in case we have a financial problem, which seems to be building on the horizon. How do we keep things going at the state level? And this is a problem that is several states are faced with. This is not something that's just Tennessee. And it's also a solution that many states are trying. But we wanted to talk to him today about natural asset companies. And we talked about this about a month or so ago. It was up for approval with the SEC. The New York Stock Exchange was part of the one of the three big sponsors for this. They pulled out at the last minute, and we'll talk a little bit about why that happened. But I said at the time, I think this thing is going to come back. And it looks like they were perhaps laying some foundation for how they're going to take over private and public land. And that is now being passed around in a lot of different states. And so you're going to see this type of bill, very much like we saw CBDC legislation via the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code legislation in all these different states. We're seeing this type of legislation, and it may be in your state as well, even if you're not in Tennessee. We're going to talk about some of the specifics in Tennessee, but also how you can identify this in other states. So joining us now is Senator Frank Nicely. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Anytime, Dave. It's always a pleasure.
It was very surprising to see this thing disappear abruptly. It looked like it was going to go through. They quietly put it in back in 2021. And then there was some pushback from some organizations. And so they delayed the SEC approval. But it wasn't the SEC not approving it. The New York Stock Exchange pulled out. What do you know about that and what happened with that?
Well, the word on the street is that the New York Stock Exchange is owned by an international group, ICE, three initials, I can't remember.
IEG, maybe? Is that because that was one of the groups?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That owns the New York Stock Exchange. But the couple that owns that, the guy used to be a U.S. senator, and he and his wife are big hunters. And at the last minute, he realized that he was not going to be able to hunt on any of this land. and he pulled out. Now, they'll probably give him some kind of special hunting permit and it'll come back later. But see, this is all coming from the United Nations. Mm-hmm. You know, years ago we had Agenda 2000, then Agenda 2020, Agenda 2030. Well, they want the governors, Biden talked about 30 by 30. They want to control 30% of the land in America by 2030. They want to control 50% of the land by 2050. And so how do you control the land? Well, I don't know how they did in Europe, but somehow in Europe, in Netherlands, France, they got control of the land. I don't know the mechanism they used over there, but the farmers over there are riding and plowing up roads, burning buildings all mm-hmm. across Europe. The mainstream press won't print it. We got to go to TikTok to find out how bad it is. But evidently, the farmers over there have about had it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're sending all that money to Ukraine, but they're cutting their diesel fuel, and they're restricting how much nitrogen they can use per acre, and you know, they're telling them they can't have a cattle on the land because of climate change, which is all ridiculous. I mean, cattle will save the world, not destroy the world. Cattle are very beneficial to the land, the topsoil, the microorganisms, the microbiome in the soil. It's all improved by cattle. The hoof action restores the prairies. On the side note, where they fenced off the prairie out west to keep the buffalo and the cattle off, it all died.
Yeah.
It takes that to keep the prairie alive.
Yes.
But, yeah. But the United Nations, they've been trying for years to do this. And the first time 20-something years ago, a coal miner told me about it. He said, Frank, they're trying to turn Middle Tennessee up through Kentucky and Virginia into wildlands. And they're called the Wildlands Project. Wildlands are lands that the United Nations, they don't want any human footprint, only animals. And then they'll have these corridors, you know, for a while everybody talk about corridors, where these animals could get in this corridor and go to another wildlands. And it all sounded crazy to me, but I did remember it. And then a few years later, I had a guy by the name of Henry Lamb. He was the smartest man I ever saw on United Nations and what they're really trying to do. I was chairman of the Ag Committee in the House, and invited him to come in and tell us. And he said at the time, he basically told us what the plan was, but it was so new and crazy, we didn't really know how to even think about it. But I do remember him saying that the only thing worse than you having your land taken by the government, confiscated and, you know, condemned. The only thing worse than that is to go into a partnership or a conservation easement. He said, don't ever sell a conservation easement. Well, now we're beginning to realize why. Yeah. See, they've changed the wording in the farm bill regarding conservation easement. It used to be about stopping erosion and helping production. Now it's about climate change. It's all about climate change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the governor's bills, I don't know if, I'd like to think the governor doesn't even realize what these bills do, because I'd feel better about him if he didn't really understand it.
But, yeah, let's talk about this. There's two different bills, and there's two bills in the Senate. There's two bills in the House here in Tennessee. Both of them have been brought by the governor, so they're being brought forward by the leadership in both houses. And so that's a lot of prestige and pressure put on your fellow lawmakers there. You got something that's coming from the governor and pushed by, you know, the leader in their legislative body. And there's two bills in each in the Senate and two bills in the House, because one of them is about public lands and the other one is about private lands. And you began to talk about the private lands with the conservation easements, and I want to get back to that. But let's begin by talking a little bit about what these bills would do in terms of public lands.
Well, Senate Bill 2069 is relative to the management of state forests. And that's the one that would turn over the management of all our state forests over to these NACs.
Mm-hmm.
So these would have control of all of our national parks or national forests or Bureau of Land Management land and all the national stuff. This would facilitate turning over our state forests and state parks over to be managed by the high bidder on Wall Street when these NACs come back. And they will, they'll be back.
Mm-hmm.
They'll get over to the high bidder. Now,
and so they securitize this stuff in the same way. They always come up with these new scams and, you know, get these things run through before anybody takes a look at it. Like they did the securitized mortgages back in the early 2000s that blew up in the mid 2000s. And so this is a way, as we talked about before, when this was up, the natural asset companies is a way for them to essentially securitize this property. They can make money off of global carbon taxes, but it also gives them control over the land. And by doing that, they can shut this all down, as the UN has been planning to do for quite some time, as you just pointed out, right?
Yeah, you did a great job explaining it. The other bill, Senate Bill 2099, is the one that deals with the private land.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess what we've got to do, David, is we've just got to make these landowners, and I've seen it time after time. I've had a family member put their land in a conservation easement with me tell them not to, but they believe that it's going to be protected forever and be able to farm it forever. And in reality, it doesn't stop the county from coming in and condemning your farm and use it for a landfill or an industrial park or anything more, anything that they can condemn it for the common good, they can condemn it and use it.
Yeah.
It's a lopsided contract. But now they'll give them some tax credits, but most farmers don't make enough money to take advantage of the tax credits.
Mm-hmm.
So these tax credits, you can sell them, and you can sell them to a rich Bill Gates or, somebody had a lot of money. They'll pay you maybe 50 cents on the dollar, maybe 25 cents on the dollar for these tax credits.
Hmm.
And then they can bounce these tax credits against profits they're making in another business. And that's the way of letting the taxpayers in America fund rich people actually buying the rights to your land. It's
wow.
It's kind of circular, but sinister.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, of course, we've got these other projects, you know, going back to the Connecticut case quite some time ago. You had land that was condemned under eminent domain for the use of a corporation. Then we saw that being done for a foreign corporation. Even though I agree with the oil pipelines, I wasn't happy with the way they were doing it with eminent domain. They gave the power to a TransCanada, which is a Canadian corporation, to condemn American farmland that had been in the families in many cases for centuries. Now they're doing it again. Summit is a corporation and seems to have, you know, ties to Republicans. Trump has had the CEO there many times, and then of course they want to pump CO2 across the country, condemning farmlands as they go to put this pipeline in so they can stick it in the ground in North and South Dakota and some of it in Iowa. And so people are looking at this and saying, you know, what is going on? And it really is the taking over the use of the land, eminent domain, but this allows them to make a tremendous amount of money and to exert control without going through this eminent domain process, because that gets, you know, that at least gets attention. This is kind of a subversive way, the way I see it, to do this with kind of a, you know, an investment scheme and still have control of this without really taking possession of it, in a sense, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's, the landowner will still get to pay taxes.
Yeah.
But he may raise cattle. They may say, well, these cattle are, you know, these batchments, this methane, too much methane, we're going to have to cut. You can't raise cattle any longer. That's what they're telling them in the Netherlands. You know, they say you can't raise cattle because of climate change. There you go back to the language in the farm bill, the new farm bill. Instead of being in for stop erosion and help with production, it says about climate change is the new language in the farm bill. So It's all sinister. But the globalists, they move so slow and they're so patient. And they've got this thing planned out for decades. And it's hard for the average person to really grasp how sinister and slow moving this whole issue is. It's for some reason they want to, you know, it's like John Kerry, you know, he said the other day, the American farmer needs to go extinct. Mm. They want us to eat bugs. They're already putting it in. They call it kerosene or something. There's a word you can look on the ingredients. K-E-C-E-R, so I can't remember what it is.
They'll think of something. It is like they had, the Alaskan king crab. They used to be called spider crab or something. They said people don't want to eat that. So they, but now they're going to give us probably real spiders and crabs. I don't know, but.
And crickets, I'll tell you what. And, you know, all kinds of research. They say the exoskeleton on these crickets are really hard on our joints, especially old people joints. So I don't need anything else being hard on my joints. But.
Well, when we look at this, there is you pointed out that this is being put forward in a lot of different states. The change to UCCs, the Uniform Commercial Code, to prohibit cryptocurrency specifically and to specifically accept a CBDC, Central Bank Digital Currency. We first heard about that. Christy Noem talked about it in South Dakota and said, I vetoed this. And then the next thing we saw was DeSantis said that he not only vetoed it, but he went the other way. He said, we're going to prohibit CBDC, but we're going to accept cryptocurrency, say that cryptocurrency will be acceptable in the uniform commercial code as payment. And so this bill, this type of bill, has been sent out for the CBDC to a lot of different states. This has as well. How do people identify this, you know, that scheme was to change the UCC code? If somebody is looking for this, and we'll give people, let's see, the Senate bill, you told me is 2099 and 2069. Those are the Senate bills in Tennessee. But for people that are outside of Tennessee, how do they identify this scheme? Because they're running this through multiple states. What would they look for in terms of a change in a bill? How is it inserted in there for what kind of purported purpose?
Tennessee, I mean, Kansas, there's one up in Kansas. In Kansas, it's House Bill 2541. And Texas, it was House Bill 3165, but it was killed in the Texas Senate.
That's good. That's good.
And they withdrew the bill. They talked about the sponsors. So it's killed in Texas, still working on it in Kansas. We're working on it here. We've got a UCC bill that 75 pages long. The sponsor can't really tell you what it does. It can't tell you why we need it. So I'm going to vote against it. We can't take a chance on this.
Yeah.
You know, in order to have central bank digital currency, they've got to get rid of cryptocurrencies. And
right.
They got to get rid of those guys. So it's so sinister that, And then Washington's so paralyzed, we can get nothing out of Washington now. So the whole burden's on the states to try blow this stuff down. And luckily, we've got some good states and a good governors like Kristi Noem. I watched her all the way through. I would love for her to be a vice president. She never wavered through the COVID.
Mm-hmm.
She just seemed to know right off the bat what was good, what was right, and didn't waver. And after all these years in politics, I pay attention to things like
that. That's right. You got to watch what they do and not what they say. And so we got this UCC bill that is done, and the parallel to it is kind of this state-level NAC, even though that has temporarily been put on hold, they're going to go back and rebrand it and make some minor tweaks. And of course, we know that that'll be back because it is the perfect way for, the NACs, once they put it on a stock exchange, the billionaires can invest in it. Any foreign country can invest in it. So it is a way to take away control of the land and monetize the carbon taxes. It's a perfect vehicle. So we know that's going to be back. Now, in terms of the state level stuff, as it manifests itself for both public and private lands, what type of things would people be looking for if they're trying to find out if this bill is happening in their state? What is the cover story for it or the way they label it?
One of the headlines here on this is acquisition and administration of agriculture real estate interest.
Okay.
That's the headline.
Okay.
And
so it'd be something like that because they do use that same type of, the language. It's almost like, they get together and they do at some of these exchange councils and stuff. They will give them some legislation and say, here, put your name on it and hand it in, sign it and hand in this legislation. And that's how they get the UCC legislation out to 25 different states at a time. So I'm sure this type of thing is happening as well at the state level to implement this natural asset company type of scheme, right?
Yeah, it's that, like I'd say, these globalists, they never give up. They just keep pushing. They're patient. If they don't get it this year, we'll get it next year. May have to wait a generation, but we'll finally get it. And the goal is, the Club of Rome, openly states that they want to reduce the population from 7 billion down to 500 million.
Mm-hmm.
And apologize, or they don't stutter. I mean, when people tell you what they're trying to do, you probably ought to believe them.
That's right.
Why would they lie about that?
Right, and we know what they want to do. The problem is that they're still doing it surreptitiously, right? Their goals are out there in front of everybody, but they have these things. Again, this natural asset company thing was kind of under the radar for a full 2 years. And then it was a group out of that you told me about, actually, the AmericanStewards.us. They reported on it about 2 years after it was introduced. They had an article called Monetizing the Air We Breathe. And that's a good way to understand this because they're going to monetize everything. The air that we breathe, the water we drink, the food that we eat, everything is going to be controlled by them. We will own nothing. And so they're creating these financial structures, doing it at the Wall Street level, doing it at the state level. And as you pointed out, our best chance of we got lucky, I guess, temporarily, at the stock market level, but they're going to come back with that, and our best chance of stopping this stuff is when it comes in at the state levels, isn't it?
Well, I tell people, if America is saved, the states are going to have to do it. I mean, Washington's paralyzed. It's just no longer functions. My congressman, Tim Burchett, when he speaks at a Lincoln Day dinner, when you leave, it's like leaving a funeral. I mean, it's so sad what he talks about,
That's right.
Can't do anything done. And I don't know. It's we can do some good work at the state level, but we need people calling us. And here again, if you're an old couple and you want to put your land in a lot of young people buy this land and put a conservation easement on it, especially if they've got a profitable business on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Say you have a business where it's very profitable, then you can buy a piece of farmland for $4,000 and you get $2,000 worth of tax credits, and you can bounce that off your profit over here. A farmer couldn't do that because he doesn't have the profit. But if you've got a rich company over here that's making lots of money, you can bounce that $2,000 tax credits against your profits from another company. So you actually bought the land for $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way for taxpayers to help rich people buy more land.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I imagine that's a lot of that is going on with all the land that Bill Gates is buying right now, you know,
he put it under. And of course, I'm sure he's right in on all this. Just right down the alley. But now he can buy that farmland and then get a conservation easement on it and then bounce those tax credits against his huge profits. And so he's actually buying land for half price.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Then he can take it off limits to farming and get people to switch over to his other thing that he got in on the ground floor to sell us bugs in some form or the other. It truly is amazing how these guys have laid this stuff out. And the key thing is for people to understand that. And as you pointed out, one of the key things is for them to understand really what is happening with the conservation easements. Many times they don't understand what that is. They might be doing it even to try to think that this is going to preserve the farm forever and keep this as farmland rather than seeing it lost to development. And so they could pass that down to future generations.
The other thing, David, is in Texas, they don't have zoning. But they have a lot of deed restrictions. Mm-hmm. And if you want to leave your farm to your children and grandchildren, you can put a deed restriction on there. No liquor stores, no subdivision. Do whatever you want to do with deed restrictions. You don't have to get tangled up with this third party that can sell the management rights to your farm to another party. It can change hands three or four times. And then sooner or later, the high bidder can tell you, you can't raise cattle. Mm-hmm. You can't use it so much nitrogen. You know, all I want to do is make sure that these farmers, these landowners, they know what they're getting into. We need to get a good real estate attorney that understands and realize that there is a global movement to do this. I mean, until you realize that Mr. Global is trying to take over the whole world, none of this makes sense.
That's right.
But when you realize that the globalists control Washington, you know, they the Bushes are all big globalists. I mean, all right, globalists. I mean, they did blah blah blah. They're all globalists. McCarthy was globalist.
Yeah.
And you get somebody comes along that's not a globalist, like Tim Burchett or somebody, and they demonize them. I mean, it's
I've interviewed, I can't remember his name. I was trying to think of his name, but he produces the Tuttle Twin books, and he's out in Utah. And he said he's been involved in politics quite a bit. He helped to get Mike Lee elected as senator. But he goes, you know, he says, I don't disagree with him on stuff. I helped to get him elected, but he really can't get anything done in Washington because, as you pointed out, it's so broken. He said, we found that we could do far more at the state level. So he created a think tank, Libertas, and they've gotten, you know, a couple hundred bills passed through there to help enhance freedom and to control the growth of government. And I think that really is the right path. We need to focus on the state level, local level. I think people could clearly see that, as I say, on a daily basis. You could see how that worked out in 2020, when everybody was locking down. Local government could either make it a lot better for you or they could make it a lot worse. So people need to pay attention to what's going on at the local level. But everybody's just totally obsessed with the presidency, where they're going to have the least amount of influence at all, both as a voter and certainly in terms of follow-up. It's important to make connections to the state and to local politicians to understand what is happening there.
Well, the state has one thing going for us that the feds can't change. They can't make us spend money. Mm-hmm. They can pass laws, but we don't have to enforce them. Mm-hmm. And we have done that in the past. Now, there's a lot of talk about notification. I fully believe that notification is legal.
Yes.
As Madison said, any action from that is unconstitutional can be notified. The states can't notify things that are constitutional, but the feds do plenty of things that aren't constitutional, and we can nullify those.
That's right.
And all it takes is backbone. And like I say, they can't make us spend money.
Mm-hmm.
They can't make us enforce their laws. And that's powerful.
And they kind of typically do it with bribery and blackmail. I think it was it Bud Halsey that introduced the bill, say that we're going to, not be on the hook to taking a lot of this money from the Department of Education or other things like that to control what we do in schools, because that's a key way that they always control people. Did he introduce a bill to stop that? I believe it was him. Maybe it was somebody else.
We've toyed that idea. They did a study down here, and what they found was that we've got more problems with our State Department of Education than we do the feds. We need to clean our own house first.
But no, that's not good. we know how bad the feds are. If the state is worse than that, that's not a good thing at all. You know,
Tennessee gets 40% of their money from the feds, and I said yes, but the feds get all their money from the states.
Yeah, that's right.
They get all their money from us, the income tax and road tax and everything. We even on our gas tax, we send them $100 million more than we get back. Now, a lot of the liberals, they say, oh, Tennessee's a receiver state. I say, well, you know, I don't believe that. I think we're about the middle of the pack. I think we send them about as much as we get back. There are states that, you know, we, I think Hawaii, for every dollar they send in on road tax, they get $5 back. You know, we send $100 million more than we get back. We send the Department of Transportation, the U.S. Department of Transportation, $100 million, roughly. I mean, that was 2 or 3 years ago. But roughly $100 million more than we get back from them. So we could opt out of the federal road program. We could set our own speed limits. We could do our own seatbelt laws. We could do a lot of different things. But like I say, it takes leadership and backbone. And I tell people, Washington's not held back by lack of brains. They know they're sorry and they know they're doing wrong. It's backbone's what they don't have. they got plenty of brains. What they need is backbone.
Well, you know, when you're talking about nullification, it's not even a theory. It was done extensively. If you look at marijuana laws, for example, that was nullification. Yeah. And Jeff Sessions, as much as and you know, regardless of what you think about marijuana, I refer to that all the time. So people think I support the use of marijuana. I don't. But what I'm saying is that from a legal standpoint, what we saw was when the states nullified it, said you're not going to enforce that here. Jeff Sessions, as desperately as he wanted to do that, didn't do anything about it because it was a bluff. I mean, they had to have the 18th Amendment to prohibit alcohol. They didn't have any constitutional authority to prohibit anything. And when they called his bluff on it, he didn't do anything. And that's what you're talking about, calling their bluff, talking about non-commandeering, the fact that they can't commandeer state resources to enforce their laws, and the fact that you know, it just isn't going to happen in the state if we get control. That's why it is so important for people to pay attention to what's going on in the state.
It is, and Governor DeSantis has done a great job in Florida. He says all the right things, but he just doesn't catch on. Now, There's something politicians have to have. It's a trait. There's no word for it in English language. There might be one in France. I don't know, but there's a word. I can't pull the word out of there that you got to have. And it's hard to, I can't describe it, but he says all the right things. If someone else read his speeches, they would love it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's not catching on, and he would have made a good vice president. I at one point I was hoping that he could get together Trump and would have Trump for 4 years and just DeSantis for 8 years. But it appears that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know who's going to get for vice president. I think that's a very, very important decision right now. Tim Scott name pops up. Kristi Noem, even Tulsi Gabbard up there. Her name's popped up a time or two. So,
well, if you go back and you look at people and their ability to make speeches, you know, we would have never had a President Jefferson in today's market. That's for sure. Everybody talked about how he's great at writing stuff and, you know, and he's a great thinker, but everybody hated his speeches.
they said it was almost effeminate.
Yeah.
Jefferson. And they said Washington was not a great speaker.
Yeah.
First time he was called on speaking when he was in legislature in Virginia, he panicked and ran out of the room.
Must have been his teeth. I don't know. Maybe that made him self-conscious.
I've seen some of his false teeth. They were primitive.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You know, it's back in that time, people knew who they were. Now we only know people from a distance. We only know them through their media image, and that is something very easy to manipulate. But, you know, talking about the threats to farms and how this is metastasizing, and, of course, it's much further along in the Netherlands. They're you know, as you talked about, they're banning nitrogen, banning fertilizer. I mean, these people are smuggling in fertilizer, and they're treating it like it's fentanyl or something, you know, coming into the Netherlands. And then you've got people like Bill Gates who, you know, there's something fishy when they say that CO2 has to be controlled to the extent that you're going to have to cut down trees and bury them. That's the most absurd thing I've ever seen. They were given tax credits for growing trees. They're a giant sink of CO2. I don't think CO2 is a problem. You know, it's necessary for plants to grow, but they want to cut down the CO2. They want to, you know, use geoengineering to take out sunlight and everything. These people are absolutely crazy. There doesn't seem to be anything that they're not capable of trying to do. So what other things have we seen here and we need to be on the lookout for at the state level in terms of some of these things attacking farming, attacking the ability to farm?
Well, you mentioned, it's maybe not exactly on that, but you mentioned geoengineering. And we have a bill this year, and of course, the people who are pushing the bill, they want us just to outlaw it, do away with it, stop it. I'd say, well, in politics, you've got to consider what's doable.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm pushing is just say, hey, if you're going to spray something in our Department of Environment, Tennessee TDEC, Tennessee Department of Environment Conservation, we need to know what it is and how much you spray it.
Good.
I mean, that's the first step. What is it? Might be good. We may say we'll more of it. We don't know. but we need to say, what is it and how much are you spraying? And anytime you're spraying, you know, if you've got a factory out here, if you're making tires and anything that goes into the air, they have to report that to our Department of Conservation. Why do these guys get to fly over and not report it?
Yes.
As all theories, the old theory was that they were, for years they denied it. Then they said, well, it's in the budget in Washington. Then they said, well, it's the dark in the skies to prevent global warming.
Mm-hmm.
And now then they said, oh, they're putting these islands in the sky to make their satellites communicate with your cell phone better so they can track you better. It's to enhance our communications with the satellites.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm just telling you what I hear. But we do know we're spraying something.
Yeah.
You don't have contrails until you're up about 28,000 feet. A lot of these things are lower than that. So we know they're spraying something. Mm-hmm. And I think the first step was just to try to find out what is it and how much. And
that's good. Yeah, there was something done by that in New Hampshire as well. And again, that is a beginning, you know, to say, well, tell us what you're doing, and then we'll talk about that. I think that's very wise, and I'm glad that that's coming up in Tennessee as well. Yeah.
I have one thing I want to talk about. You know, up until the year I was born, 1947, we had a state property tax, no sales tax, but a property tax. And you paid your property tax to the county, and then you sent the county your state tax, and the county sent it on to the state. In 1947, they passed the sales tax. They said, if you'll let us have a sales tax, we'll do away with the property tax. So they rolled the property tax back to zero, but they didn't do away with it. So I've introduced a resolution. It's already passed in the House. And what it would say is, we'd have to pass it with a simple majority this year. Then next year, we'd have to have a two-thirds majority. Then we'd put it on a ballot with the governor, and it would have to get a majority of the people to vote for the governor. And we would amend the state constitution to outlaw a state property tax.
Good.
So that's a big push this year. We've got several big things going. We've got our gold and silver. We're trying to put some of our rainy day fund, instead of storing it in stocks and bonds with State Street, put it over in gold and silver and store it in Texas till we can get our own depository. Gold and silver is about the only thing you ever buy. I hope it doesn't go up, because if it goes up, everything else you got's gone down. So it's kind of like an insurance policy.
That's right. Yeah, it keeps its value. We talk about that many times. Talk about, you know, how much gold did it take for somebody to get a custom made suit, you know, 150 years ago or something like that. Still about the same.
Go back to Roman. It's yeah. Amazing how it's been a store of value. And a dollar.
That's right.
And it's
are all good examples, and it's one of the reasons why I like to have you on, and to get people to understand that there are things. Washington is dysfunctional. It's like trying to push on a rope to get anything done. There's too much big money, and special interests have taken it over. Can't really get anything done there, but there still is a possibility, at least, to get something done at the state level. You're a very good example of that, Senator Nicely, and so I really do appreciate the work that you do and the warnings that you give to people, and everybody needs to be on the lookout for these types of sister bills to the natural asset company idea, things that are being pushed through at the state level so they can take control of state lands as they wish to do with all the federal parks and other things like that. So it's very important that people keep their eyes open and their ears open to what's going on.
It's so, Senator, it's like the derivatives back in the late 80s, like
yes.
When they started derivatives. I can't explain it to my grandkids what they are, but for every $1 trillion worth of real assets, there's $100 trillion balance on it. And who knows when it's going to all come crashing down.
By putting those things together, they hide stuff as well. You know, when you got an ETF for gold or silver, do they really have the gold and silver in those vaults in Shanghai? And when you looked at these real estate derivatives, you know, we can't separate any particular property. You just mix them all together in a blender, essentially. And so a big part of this is, creating confusion and ambiguity about what is really there and what it's attached to. And that's what we're seeing in these NACs, as well as these types of structures, to try to surreptitiously and quietly take over control through financial instruments of the land, because they want all of the land under their control and they want to essentially own everything. This is a way of taking ownership away very, very in a very sneaky way. You know,
if someone bought the management rights to the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, what could they do that would make it give off any more oxygen or absorb any more carbon? What could they do? How do you make that? I mean, the trees are going to do what you're going to do.
Yeah, that's right.
And so the whole thing is a shell game.
Yeah. It's a way of getting us to pay them for something that we shouldn't have to pay them for. You know, I've always said this about the carbon taxes. I said, so we're going to pay carbon taxes. We're going to pay like an indulgence, you know, like some kind of religious indulgence. We're going to pay to sin. We're going to pay to use energy. Who does that money go to? Well, how are they entitled to have that money? Oh, well, they're going to do good things with it, like they're going to plant trees. Now, I guess they're going to cut trees down and bury them. But, you know, it's going to be whatever the approved activity is, which is all stuff that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't. It's not necessary. No. The whole thing is a shell game.
Anybody that thinks cutting trees down and burning is a good idea. I mean, I don't, it's just, it's, they don't understand the carbon cycle. But I've always said this CO2 they use out there, there's a question out there, they will be selling a lot of that for this fracking. So some of these fracking, depending on what shells you're in, like our shell here in East Tennessee, they tell me that the best thing to frack these old oil wells with to make them produce more is CO2. Mm-hmm. So that CO2 is a little bit expensive. If they start sequestering, it'll get a little cheaper. They use more of it. So there's always something sinister behind this stuff that you find out after too late.
Maybe it's just a giant plot by Dr. Pepper to make more carbonated drinks. You know, take over the world with carbonated drinks. Senator Nicely, it's always great talking to you. Thank you so much for warning us about this. And if people want to contact their representatives here in Tennessee, that's Senate Bill 2099 and 2069. One of them is about the public lands, and the other one's about the private lands. Yes, go ahead.
Let me give one shout out to American Stewards of Liberty.
Yes.
They're out of Texas, and they're on the front line of all this, and American Stewards of Liberty, and I think you keep up with them, they'll probably keep you posted.
Yes, yeah, I need to contact them and get them on as well. They were the ones who started sounding the alarm to this NAC stuff about a year and a half ago. So that's good. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Have a good day. Thank you, Senator Nicely. Thank you very much.
The David Knight Show is a critical thinking super spreader. If you've been exposed to logic by listening to the David Knight Show, please do your part and try not to spread it. Financial support or simply telling others about the show causes this dangerous information to spread farther. People have to trust me. I mean, trust the science. Wear your mask, take your vaccine, don't ask questions.
Using free speech to free minds, it's the David Knight Show.